Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Just before we jump into the episode this week, I wanted to share a little bit about the Thrive community that I run. It's a place where many like-minded women go to connect and share their experience with getting and staying successfully sober. There are different sections, like the main Thrive community feed, where people post about things that are up and coming or about challenges they're facing, and they get incredible support from other members of the group. It really is a special, special place to be right now. There are also sections to share your milestones, because every win, even the really small ones, are a big thing to celebrate, and we acknowledge that. There are Thrive events, there are the weekly Zoom recordings, so you can go back and see all the weekly Zoom meetings and all the topics that have been covered in those meetings at your own leisure. There's a share sober tips section, and then there are group chats for the first 30 days, the first 100 days, the first year, and over a year. There's a knowledge hub as well, and in the knowledge hub you'll find a place for books and book recommendations. There's a section of how to survive the first 30 days, so if you come in completely brand new to getting sober, you can hit the ground running and find tools and information to get a structure set up for yourself from the outset. There's also my Thrive Sober program, there's a toolkit, there's understanding the brain science, and a space to read and learn about all the topics under emotional sobriety, most of which have been written by myself. So come into Thrive. If you're thinking about it or you're lacking community, I would say just jump in and go for it. And maybe we'll see you in there soon. Hello and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today I'm talking to Grace, who's originally from London but now lives in a place called Biddulph, which is in Stoke-on-Trent. And Grace is sober 1 year tomorrow, so it's amazing. Yeah, amazing timing. I love the fact that we get to record this pretty much bang on your soberversary. And I know Grace really well because she has been a very important member of my Thrive community for pretty much the whole time of your sobriety. So, Grace, I'm really delighted that you are where you are. You must feel amazing. It's such an achievement. And I'm excited to share your story today. So thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Awesome. So why don't you tell us a bit about yourself before we jump into your story?
Right. Well, I'm Grace, 49, I'm 50 next month. And I'm a support worker with children with challenging behaviour. I've not long gone into this side because I was with learning disabilities. I'm the youngest of nine children. So I'm the baby of the family. I've got lots of nieces and nephews, and I've got seven kids between me and my husband and my first husband. But we had custody of all of them, so they all sort of know me as mum.
Yeah.
So I've got four biological and three step, and then I've got my little grandkids that you may probably see lots of pictures on Thrive.
Yeah, you just had grandbaby twins.
Effie and Reggie.
Oh, amazing. I didn't know that you were one of nine children, so that must be busy at Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah, busy and quite mad, I imagine.
We're all scattered over the place now, though, so we don't get to see each other as much.
Oh. And what about, what about your life with alcohol then? Why don't we go back to the beginning and talk us through when you got into drinking and what that looked like for you?
Well, I wasn't really, you know, you hear some that say like, oh, it was over the park when we was teenagers and all that. I lived in the central of like London and I've never done any of that. But I remember going to school with my friend's disco about age 13, 14. And I got like a bit tipsy and I kissed this boy that I really fancied. And I think then I realised, like, oh, it gives me confidence, this. You know, I come like thinking I'm Beyonce. So, yeah, so that gave me like that false sense of confidence and that carried me through, right through up until I stopped drinking. In fact, I think the older I got, the worse it got with this false sense of like confidence. And I sort of modelled myself on, I had an older friend and she was a single mum to two kids and I sort of modelled myself on her and she used to drink and relax and, you know, have an evening with a bottle of Bacardi. So I used to get hooches back in the day.
Oh, I remember
those. And used to have me hooches. And I used to go clubbing like four times a week and go out. And then I had my son, Johnny. I was 19. So it was just like, it was always like my treat time. I'd have a pizza once a week with him. And then the other night I would put him to bed at 7 and then I'd watch my soaps. And it was always a couple of bottles of hooches. And then I'd like went on to wine and I'd go down on that bottle of wine. And there was an offie just downstairs. So I'd call in on the way home from school and get the wine and sit and watch. It was always when he went to bed, that was my time. And I think that's why it was so hard as time went on to sort of break that habit of at 7 o'clock when the soaps come on. But on all my Facebook memories, it says like, oh, decided I'm giving up drinking. 4 days later, I gave in, started drinking again. Then I'd done 3 months for a charity thing. And I got quite a lot of money like given to me. So I thought, God, that goes to show how much people must think that I can't not drink, you know, because I raised like, I think it was nearly $1,000 for this charity for not drinking for 3 months. But I had all my wine all set up for straight after 3 months. Didn't drink when I had the kids, but then soon as I had them, I started drinking again. And then it just continued until it was like, and I weren't really, I'm not one of them ones, you know, where they weren't drinking. I'm a drinker in the house. I'd much prefer to have me drink in the house rather than out. Yeah. Because I think I know deep down, I think when I go out, there's no off button and I'll just carry on drinking and drinking and drinking. And I used to think like blackouts was people's excuse, like as an easy card to get out of. But I've had many blackouts and where I don't really, even to this day, remember what has happened. It's just very sketchy. And I think, you know, I could have been dead in a ditch. I could have got raped, could have got murdered, and I still wouldn't know to this day. So I think for my own safety, I used to like drinking and I'd get 2 bottles of wine and then they have them deals on, don't they? Like you get 3 bottles for such and such a price. And it didn't matter the wine. It was, we just used to always look on percentage. As long as it was high percentage, I was happy. So I'd have it if I was had a good day at work, bad day at work, miserable. If I was off, that was it. So I'd get me 2 bottles of wine. Sometimes we'd get 3 and then I'd open the 3rd bottle and I'd be sitting there and then I'd fall asleep. But because I'd open that 3rd bottle, the next day I'd have to get another 2 bottles because I knew that that open bottle wouldn't be enough.
Yeah.
And it was that vicious circle. And I hated the way I was feeling. I woke up and you could see like all your blue veins, you know, like through your hands and your feet where like it's just, you can just see it's just.
Inflammation, isn't it? And
yeah. And I'd go to work and I wouldn't want anyone to be too close to me because I could actually feel the alcohol seeping out of me. And I'd be like, sort of like this, sort of moving away, so you know, like not too close. And I wouldn't do any overtime for anyone because I didn't want, like, you know, that was my time. Didn't want to have to have a, you know, overtime and miss my drinking. And having the grandkids, not, you know, I didn't want to have them in case, you know, because it would disturb my drinking. And I'd always want to have a lay in on my day off. Didn't want to be. So yeah, that was sort of it really, just going around in vicious circles, trying to give up, going back drinking and just wanted to get out the rat race, really.
Yeah. How long do you think that you were in that period of drinking, but then also wanting to stop drinking?
Well, years ago, I lost the top of my finger through alcohol. So you think that that would have been warning enough, because me and my ex-husband got in a massive fight in a pub and my door got slammed on my finger. So you'd think that that would have gave me a wake-up call, but it didn't. I think for quite a few years, I've always been going toying with the idea where I wanted to give up. And so my brother died 2 years ago. He was addicted to drugs and in the end alcohol, and he got sepsis and he died. And anyway, like, so at his funeral, I got absolutely hammered. Like, I had like a blackout, can't remember. To this day, I don't know if someone spiked my drink, because I've drank for many, many years and I've never been in that bad. I went to the toilet and my legs wouldn't work. I couldn't get off the toilet. And luckily, my son is well known, and someone must have phoned him and said I was in the toilet. And he came in and he literally had to pick me up, throw me over his shoulder, put me in the van and drive me home. And he said, "Don't open the door, Mum. Don't open the door," because it was the van. Didn't take the notice, opened it, just fell flat on out of the van. But the next, over like numerous days, like 2-3 days, I just couldn't walk. My legs for days couldn't walk. And I think that was it. Like, it even though it took me another year to do it, I think that was when I thought that was dangerous. You know, I could have been raped in there, and I still to this day wouldn't have known. I could have been attacked, I could have been murdered, anybody could have done anything that night. And to this day, I won't have remembered. And there's no way I would have been able to get home, because my legs really didn't work at all. But still carried on drinking, still was 2.5 bottles, and I thought, if I'm not careful, then I think that was continuously playing on my mind, because I thought addiction obviously runs in my family. Mm. And I thought, if I don't get on top of it, my kids are going to end up burying me, because it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. But I always fought with it because of this, the word, the alcoholic. And I used to think, well, I'm not an alcoholic because I don't drink in day. I only drink for night time. You know, when I put my mind to it, I can go days and days and days without it. I've not lost any jobs out of it. I've not broke up in any relationships through it. And then I just started turning my mind around, and I used to think, does it matter what label it is? It's how it's making you feel. Mm. And it's making me feel crap. Every night I'd fall asleep on the sofa. Every night, I'd roll up into bed and get into bed and I'd wake up, and I used to continuously have a groggy head. Yeah. You know, and I'd be like sort of shaking like that. And I used to put it down to like the Kelly shake, because my dad and all them, like, and I still do like get anxiety sometimes, and I will shake like when I'm nervous a bit. But my anxiety, Terry, was through the roof. You know, it was getting to a stage where, like, obviously I didn't want to kill myself, but just didn't want to be here. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't bother me if I didn't wake up, because I'd go to bed of the night, and if I hadn't had a drink, it was just my stomach be churning, and I'd be thinking if something was going to happen to the kids, or this would happen or that would happen. And it was just a living nightmare. So I used to have a drink to help me sleep, and it was just going round and round and round in circles. And I thought, I've got to change this mindset, because it's not doing me any good. And it's just like, I'm going to be. So I started thinking, well, even if something did happen to the kids, what can I do? You know, if I'm drunk and I'm in bed, what really can I do? Mm. So I thought I needed to stop it. I needed to do it for me, for my health.
Mm. Yeah. And so talk to me about, we talk a lot about this in Thrive, don't we? We love this story about how you joined. You were on an all-inclusive holiday. I think it was your first ever all-inclusive with a swim-up bar.
For what happened, it was on my son's birthday, and I'd been thinking for ages and ages about giving up drinking. And there was a thing on This Morning, and it was about women are more high risk of getting cancers and heart disease and this and that. And I was like, God, it's like because I was just being sat there really thinking about it, and I thought, God, it's like some like God's like talking to me and telling me, look, Grace, you need to get your act together. And then at the same time, this woman that I know called Claire is, I used to be on Weight Watchers like a while back, and she had sent me a message, and she said, oh, how are you doing? I'm nearly a year sober, she said, and I said, oh, I'm really struggling. And she said, oh, are you on Instagram? And I said, no. And she went, oh, you want to get yourself on there and follow Sassy Sober Mum. You know, she does podcasts as well. She's really good. And I thought, God, this is like mental. There's something on this morning. And now that Claire's just randomly sent me a message telling me, do I follow Sassy Sober? So I set up an Instagram account, just with my sober journey. And I followed her, and she said, yeah, she's got like this paid, like, you know, this group that you can pay in that's private. And, you know, it's like a bit like Facebook, but it's just, you know, just for use. And she said, I've not done that. She said, but, and I thought, oh, I'm going to go on. So I followed you straight away. You're my first little follower. I followed. And then I clicked on the Thrive thing, and I thought, I'm going to do it. So I call it my magic card. It's my credit card. So I got my magic card out, and I just joined for 6 months.
You were straight in, weren't you? Oh, yeah, that's right.
So when my husband got off, I told him, and then that night was a meeting, and I came on, and you spoke to me straight away. So straight away I was all in, and then I went on holiday, and I thought, oh, God, what have I done?
Yeah.
Why have I decided to go sober, like, you know, an all-inclusive holiday, and there's a swim-up bar, and it's my 49th birthday. Why didn't I do it when I got back? And then I logged in, and I thought, I'd get advice from the women, and Noreen and you and some of the other ladies said, no, because you're always going to have these moments, you know, whether it's birthdays, funerals, Christmases. And I thought, yeah, do you know what? They're right. I've just got to lie. So while I was on holiday, I used to come up to on the balcony, and I would click on, and I would log in and come on the meetings while I was abroad. I was on holiday as well with me best mate Kelly, and she's been really supportive. Like, you know, she's so good. Like, we went out at Christmas, and she had like a mocktail with me, so I didn't feel, she buys me no secco when I'm doing well, or, you know, for celebrations or anything. Or if I go round her house for a drink, she'll drink no secco or get non-alcoholic gin or whatever. She's ace. So yeah.
So it's really supportive, and that's, I mean, I think that's, it's so important to have people in your corner. And, you know, and I think that probably that's why you got on so well in Thrive. You were, you know, very invested in it. You were always in the meetings and always communicating. I think I remember, obviously, in the beginning, which is nearly a year ago now, it's absolutely mad.
It's mad.
You were online a lot, like posting, you know, you were really in
this. 3 times a day.
Yeah.
You just go on, really, and go morning, yeah, afternoon, evening.
Yeah. And I'm not being funny, you know, to go from that level of drinking that you would have been used to, you know, two and a half, and being in that kind of habit loop for a really, really long time. Like, look, stopping drinking is hard for everybody, but when you're drinking those kind of quantities, that's really difficult, because you just physically as well in the beginning, it's so difficult. And I always think it was so courageous of you to jump in straight away, 6 months, let's go. And then all-inclusive holiday, swim up bar. I remember you dialing in on your holiday, and we were all kind of coaching you through those moments. And, you know, and that, I just think that to be able to be there for you and for all the women in that group that are there for each other, it's just a really lovely thing that there is that kind of support available. But you're kind of, talk to me about your first 100 days or so, and, you know, what that was like, because you really went through lots of bits and pieces. Like, you were kind of, you know, struggling a bit with expectations. We used to talk about that a lot, didn't we, about how much you thought it would be a certain thing by a certain time, and all that stuff. So what was the kind of first 100 days like for you?
When I first signed up, I was like, yeah, all in and all that. And then obviously when I went on holiday, I was, because I wasn't expecting the swim up bar. So that sort of, that threw me when I had the swim up bar. And then, sorry, my husband just walked in. So then that put me off. And then it was like when I came back, I'll tell you when I first really sort of struggled to think. There was one time when I came back from my son's and I was like, we went past the shop and I just thought, oh, do you know what? I could just have a drink. And I said to my husband, should I just, I've proven that I cannot have a drink. Should I just have a drink? And then we was like, I said, no, I'm not going to. And then when my daughter-in-law and son had their baby shower, there was these little bottles, and it sounds so silly, it was these little bottles that said, pop it when she pops it. And there was all these like little Prosecco bottles. And oh my God, I really wanted to cave that day. And it was like, I just thought, you know, I've proven. And I went into the toilet and I just had a little chat to myself. And I said, I know if I have them, then I'm just going to go back to drinking two bottles of wine. Because I thought, I know it's not going to just be that little bottle.
Yeah.
I most probably would have took about 6 or 7 off the table and thrown them in my bag and then stopped off at the shop and got it. And instead of that, I had my grandson, I had Charlie, so they could go round and enjoy all their times with their friends. And that's what I just had to talk with. I thought, you know, I'm having Charlie. Everyone else is drinking. I'm watching Charlie. They're going around having a nice time. They're spending quality time with their friends. And I'm spending time with my little blue-eyed boy.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I expected the weight just to drop off me, because I've always struggled with my weight. So when you'd think, when you're giving up 2.5 bottles of wine,
yeah,
it would just drop off you. Join the swimming world. And I was like, yeah, done the measurements, joined the swimming world, took pictures, and I haven't lost nothing. I haven't lost an ounce, and I haven't got into running, and I haven't done all these things. Like, because as I said to you, like, I've gone on Instagram and you see all these people that have done like rock climbing, they've gone into running, they've done all these, they've got like a new lease of life. And I'm like, I still ain't got the energy to put my clothes away that's still up there that needs to be even put in the wardrobe. And I still have little afternoon naps and you know, I have to push myself to go aerobics and stuff. And I just think, that ain't me. So, you know, you just got to like think it's your own journey. And I think you made me realise that it's your own journey. And you don't follow. You know, some people lose weight quicker. Some people find all these new activities to do. Mm. But mine is that I spend quality time with my grandkids. I can have a drop of a hat. You know, I can go round and babysit them. I can look after, like, they're going away for 3 days on their own and I'm looking after the grandkids. I wouldn't have done that before because I would have seen that as my days off.
Yeah.
And that's me time and I've had my kids and blah, blah, blah. Mm. So you have your own little wins, I think.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And I think that's such an important point. There was a couple of things there that you said, actually, that I think a lot of people will resonate with. When you get a certain way in, even if you're kind of ticking all the sober boxes and you feel like you're cruising, those cravings or that FOMO or that glamorous, you know, seeing the bottles and like being in the baby shower, and they can still come out of the blue and catch
you. They come out thick and fast.
Yeah.
Because I thought, yeah, you know, I'm over it and I can deal with it. And then it just hits you like that.
Yeah.
And then you start really believing, you forget all them bad days. And I won't forget them bad days. Do you know what I mean? I will talk to myself and I will say, do you remember them blackouts? Do you remember to this day you don't remember?
Mm.
And you're not a normal drinker. You know, you can't just, you know, I could never, and to this day, I still cannot understand people that can have a glass of wine with their dinner and put an open bottle back in the fridge and have it over a week. I just, it blows my mind, Terry. Honest to God, to this day, I just cannot understand it. I just think, wow, why would you even bother?
Yeah.
Why would you bother to open a bottle of wine just to have one?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow, I'm like amazed by them.
Yeah. But and that's so insightful, isn't it? That's so insightful, because it's a bit like those types of drinkers, which are the real take it or leave it drinkers in society. They would treat a glass of wine like a cheese sandwich. You know, do I want a cheese sandwich or not? No, I don't want a cheese sandwich. I want tuna. Okay, cool. Let's move on. That's what their drinking is like. It's just it doesn't have any real significance. If they're in an event and someone offers them a glass, they might have one, but they also might not. And then more often than not, probably don't. And I think that when you are an overdrinker, there is that illusion, that thought that, well, maybe I can learn to drink like that or to drink. But it's not going to happen because...
You'll never, ever go back to that.
No, but you also said it right there. Like, when you were in your drinking, you just couldn't understand why someone would stop after one. I was exactly the same. Most people that are listening to this podcast, you know, can't just have one drink and put the bottle back in the fridge and have a cup of tea. They will have one or two glasses more than they want, or they'll drink one or two nights a week more than they want, or they'll drink more than that. You know, it's about having that direct, honest conversation with yourself. What is my drinking really like? And you know, is that going to get any better? Where is the evidence that that's going to get any better? Because have I got any evidence that I can moderate? Well,
no.
Exactly. It's a no, usually. Or I could moderate, but it would take great effort. And the nights that I wasn't drinking, I might be feeling a bit annoyed that I'm not drinking because I need to tick a box of having at least two nights off a week so that I haven't got a problem, in inverted commas, you know?
And I did used to do that. I'd be grumpy because I'd be pinged off, and it was like I was almost making an excuse to why I can go and get bowled because I'm peed off. You know, someone's peed me off, so I deserve it. I work hard. Why shouldn't I? And that's how I used to talk myself out. I work hard, you know. I go to work. Why shouldn't I have a drink? I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I don't do anything. Don't spend those money on makeup. Don't do this. Why shouldn't I have a drink?
Yeah.
But it's like, I shouldn't, because I deserve to be healthy. I deserve to be around for my kids. I deserve to be around for my grandkids. And yeah, I could still die tomorrow, but at least my kids ain't going to say, oh, my mum sat there drinking two bottles of wine a night and she drunk herself to death. You know, I'm giving. And I know that sounds really harsh, but it's the truth, because your drinking will only progress and progress till it gets three bottles, four bottles. And before long, you've lost everything. And I just thought, you know, and I did, as I said, I'd sit there and I'd really feel like I was missing out on some days because I'd think everyone's out and they're having a nice time. But then I just played it in my head and I used to think, yeah, but then I know I'm going to get drunk and I'm going to be heaving. I'm going to make a fool of myself. I'm going to cause an argument because I'm terrible as well. I will always say something that's been on my mind. So if someone's upset me, when I've had a drink, oh, God be grace, don't know when to shut up. Mm. And then when I'm sober, I'm like, oh, God. And then I go through all my messages thinking, who have I upset? What have I done? And I don't have to do that ever now. Don't check my phone. Don't have to worry in case I've sent someone an insulted message or something rude or done anything to upset anyone. I go to bed, I brush my teeth every night, I put tropic skincare and cleanse my face, and I get into bed and that's it.
Yeah. And that's a good life, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's it. That is, I think anyway, that's the good life, because you are meeting your own goals, like doing those sorts of things, the way that you want to look after yourself and being able to do that consistently every day and every night because you're not drinking is an achievement. And it's nice. It's nice to do that stuff yourself. Like, you deserve to look after yourself. You deserve to be happy, like you said, happy and healthy, and to not wake up with fear and anxiety and, oh my God, what have I done? Here's another reason to feel bad about myself again. You know, that's a horrible trap to be in.
And I think a lot of people don't put anxiety and drinking together. And that's the sad thing, because I think a lot of people, they drink to self-medicate, to help them sleep or to help their anxiety. But what they don't realise is the next day it's like 20 times worse, and then you're in a vicious circle. You just have to get over them a few days of feeling anxious, and then it does subside, it does get better.
Yeah, that's right. Or build up a toolbox, which is what we all have to do in sobriety, is to build up that toolbox of learning how to self-regulate and how to calm ourselves down, or how to help ourselves manage the anxiety. You know, whatever tools work, there are lots and lots of different ways that you can deal with discomfort and feelings that are coming up, or anxiety and or stress. Like, there's loads and loads of healthy ways of managing that. But when you drink, you don't access that. You never build that toolbox. You just, the only thing in your toolbox is your favorite drink, and that's it. And so, you know, when you stop drinking, it is like you look at this empty toolbox and you think, oh my God, what do I do? How do I, you know, and that takes time. That takes time to build that stuff up. But a lot of it is like you said there, which is just knowing that it will pass. You know, it's a simple thing, but it's just not going to last
forever. It does pass. Just knowing that it will pass. Something.
Yeah. And also just sitting with it as well. We talk about that a lot, don't we? You know, just sit with it. Sit with the discomfort. Sit with the feeling. Like, how bad can it get? At the end of the day, when that thing has passed, you'll reflect on that, and then you'll look at yourself and think, well, do you know what? I'm still here. I did cope with it. Whatever it was, I got through it. And that will be a good feeling as well. But you also touched on something I thought was really important, and I really, really remember this in our chats together on the group and stuff, and that is that comparison thing about how easy it is, and this is not just a you thing, but I think this happens a lot, right? But, you know, you compare yourself to what you're seeing on social media, and or you're comparing the way that other people do it, and if you're not doing that same stuff or feeling that same way or having those same positives, you're going to feel like you're not doing it properly, or that it's not maybe as good as it really is in reality. And so I think that's a really, really good point that you brought up there, is about you got to find your way through it. Like, you got to do what works for you. And if you want to be one of those people that climbs mountains and snowboards and runs, and I am a bit like that, actually. I quite like a sporty challenge. Like, that's quite up my street. But you know, it might be that you get really creative, or it might be that you just learn how to rest and connect with your family more. You know, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. It's got to be right for you. I think that's a really important message.
Definitely.
And so what about, let's talk about, what did you find the most challenging, really? Like, what was the biggest challenge for you in getting sober?
I think when I first, like, went out for the first few times, and people would be like, oh, you ain't got a drink problem, have a drink, you know, and they'd be like, you know, and I'd be like, no, you're all right, I don't need one, I'm okay. Or as I said, that just around, like, that environment. But I don't know, really, because I think when I put my mind to it, I'm quite stubborn. So when I did put my mind to it, and it was just when I had them fleeting moments, and I had to really talk to myself. But because I had Thrive, I'd learned them toolboxes. So it was there for me to, maybe go another bath, or sit in a different part of the sofa, because I always sit on this part of the sofa of night when I was having a drink. So I'd sit over there, and, you know, I'd watch the telly. It was just little things like that. I would do to, but that was mainly it, just that fear of missing out. That was my biggest challenge, and just changing that mindset and thinking, you're not missing out. What is it that you actually think you're missing out on? You're becoming somebody that you're not. Because I know people say, oh, you talk the truth, and you know, you're your true self when you've had a drink, but you're not. And, you know, so to be honest, as I said, it was all the times before I found challenging, but as soon as I joined Thrive, yeah, I had a few odd days where I wanted to cave, but I knew deep down I wouldn't, you know. And now I'm sort of that year, and I am thinking, because it was always a year, and I thought, oh, when I get to my 50th and I go to Mexico, I'll celebrate, you know, I've done a year. But I've shared that with yous on Thrive, and I'll just make sure I log in and stay connected, and because there's no way, you know, there's no way I'm going back to that way of life, that anxiety. And, you know, honestly, that anxiety that I had was awful. And it's definitely connected to alcohol, because I don't have it as bad now.
Yeah. I do hear that actually a lot from people that, even people that are on anxiety medication, after a really good amount of time in sobriety, they don't have any anxiety at all, or they can even reduce medication or completely stop taking medication. So it's amazing how much of an impact not drinking can have on your well-being, but especially with anxiety. I hear that.
Yeah, and I do think the other one is the expectations. You know, anyone that's starting, you know, don't follow like-minded people, because I think they really support you and stuff. But I just think, don't compare yourself to them, because then you start beating yourself up, and you know, then you think that becomes challenging in itself, because you're thinking, well, why ain't I like that? You know, why am I still having afternoon naps? Why ain't the weight dropping off me? You know, why ain't I sleeping a total 8 hours? Why am I still waking up 3 or 4 times to go away? Because that's all me. Mm. But, you know, that's just, I've got my own little wing goals, you know, just... And you've got to just not compare yourself with others, because that will become a challenge in itself.
Mm. Yeah, it's almost like when you, in the beginning, you don't probably realise, you just follow anything sober. But then after a while, it's like having a regular cull, in a way, of making sure that the accounts that you are following are the right ones for you, that you can really resonate and connect with, you know, because yeah. It's about, yeah, you don't want to be filling your feed full of people that are achieving all these things that then just becomes another stick to beat yourself up about.
Exactly.
But you're not going out and rollerblading and climbing trees.
And then I think also that can be another thing to sort of say to yourself, oh, well, I ain't feeling any better. I'm not doing all this, so I might as well go back to drinking.
Yeah.
But no, it's not.
Yeah,
you know, just find your own little wins, and then you know.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that as well comes down to trying to get into that energy where you accept your journey for what it is. It's not about what it should be. It's about, this is what's happening for me, and that's okay. This is my experience of it. You know,
and that took me a while, didn't it?
Yeah, it does take a while, but. I think, if I'm being honest, I do think the expectation side of things, I do get lots of messages from people that will say, I'm so many days sober, but I feel terrible. Why? I'm so many. And I see that a lot. And especially people under 6 months. And then I sort of always politely challenge the expectation and say, well, why would you expect to feel any better? Just play with that, you know, not being confrontational, but just to play with the thought process that's going on there. Like, well, who said it was going to be better by now? Like, why? A lot of the accounts on social media, especially the big influencers, they're years and years sober. You know, it's like me, I'm 5 years, and it's sometimes on some of my posts where I'm talking about joy and magic and da-da-da-da-da, you could imagine that if you were on day 5 and then you looked at one of my more joyful posts about sobriety, it would be easy to compare and be like, well, no, I don't feel that. But and that's why I think it's challenging about making sure that when the content goes out there, it does cover the spectrum of where people are, because sometimes I've tried to post things about, this is what it was like in the first 30 days or the first 100 days, because that's a very different picture to how it is now. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, sobriety gets better and better and better, but in the first 100 days, there, you know, it wasn't the same as it is now. Like, I didn't have all the magic and all the things. Like, yeah, some things felt better, but lots of things also didn't feel better. And it's
I think people think, don't they, when they give up drinking, that they're gonna live this really happy life, but you're still gonna have your problems.
Yeah,
but I think we deal with them better when you're sober. And I've definitely found that, because I used to come across as more agitated and angry and stuff in drink when I was stressed, whereas now it just goes over my head. I just think, hey, well, I'll get on with it, whereas before I'd be like, meh, 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 meh. And so I do think, in the long run, you do deal with your whole setup better.
Yeah, yeah.
When you stop it.
Yeah, it's a bit like getting. I think I remember when things really started to feel quite calm, whereas I think when I was drinking, life was a bit more chaotic. Maybe my emotions were more up and down. And I didn't deal with stress very well. I'd maybe lose my temper more quickly. I didn't have as much patience, like all of those sorts of things. And that did get easier when I stopped drinking, but it didn't completely go away. And I think that's the interesting thing. It's like if you have that expectation that life is just going to be click of the fingers, perfect, you're never going to suffer again, you're never going to get mad at your kids again. I remember once I really shouted at one of my children, when I was sober, and I thought, God, I didn't think I was going to get that angry again now that I'm sober. And it's like, it was really, I know it sounds so stupid now, but it was really eye-opening for me, because it was, I sort of realised, well, of course, I'm just a person, I'm just human, you know, I'm going to make mistakes, or I'm still going to get angry and still going to struggle with things. And I think that taught me that that's okay, but it also taught me that getting sober, you know, it's not just a big magic pill. It's not just a quick fix. Like you said, you'd still have life to deal with, and life will always throw up challenges, always.
I do think you deal with it better.
But you do deal with it better. And I think that you learn how to manage yourself better in those situations as well. Like you said a few times in this conversation, you check in with yourself. You care more about that as well, I think. Like you're able to have more clarity around that. And I think you care more about improving things where you need to, because you're not perfect and you still make mistakes or you still get things wrong. But there might be that little period afterwards where you reflect and think, oh, actually, you know, I'd like to do that better. I might try and do it a little bit differently next time. Or, you know, you just got a bit more, whereas maybe before when I was a drinker, it was either I was like really ecstatically high, or I was like really depressed down, feeling rubbish and anxious. And everything just kind of rolled into those two buckets. Whereas now it's like it's more calm. It's, you know, life feels more easy. But when challenges come, I can think about how I'm going to deal with them. I don't fly off the handle maybe as quickly or as much. Not saying that I don't ever, but just not as much. And I'm able to reflect where I've behaved in a situation. If I don't love my reaction to something, I think, well, I'll do it differently next time, or I'll keep trying. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like
that
space to deal with life, I think, that you don't have when you're drinking, because you're always just focused on drinking or getting over it. You know, it's, yeah. So what's been the best bits then? So I know obviously you talked a little bit about some of the benefits for you, but what's the biggest gain for you?
Just, I think, the freedom. Just going up and getting into bed and sleeping, and not, like as you said, always focusing on it. So like, you know, if we went out for a meal and I had two drinks out, then I'd have to stop off and get some bottles of drink, because as I said, I can't just have one wine. It's just nice, everything, to go out, have a nice meal and not worrying about drink being involved. If my son wants me to have Charlie and the twins, I can just, yeah, no problem. And I'm sitting there thinking, no, I've got 3 nights of having these and I can't have a drink. And it's just them little things that are big to me.
Yeah.
And like work, if they want me to do overtime, I can go and earn it near enough 200 quid by going in, because I ain't like sitting there thinking, oh no, that's my drink time. It's just purely like freedom of, and not feeling rough waking up and having, and if I have got a headache, it's just because I've got a headache, you know. It's not because I feel absolutely, because I used to have a groggy head every single day. It was like normal.
I remember that reduced baseline feeling that I'd have as well, just always feeling a little bit groggy in the
week. Every day.
Yeah, horrible.
Because I used to drink every day, so, and if I was being good, because if I had work the next day, I would maybe just have one bottle or one bottle and a half, and that was me being good.
One bottle was me moderating as well. It's madness, isn't it, really, when you think about it? Like, I just stick to one bottle, that's moderating. I mean, one bottle is so much wine. It's just so much.
People used to say to me, God, Grace, how do you drink two bottles of wine? And I'd be like, it's only like three, like, it's six large glasses. So that's all, you know, justified. It's only six large glasses.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, when you, like, we're laughing about it now. But it is, that is definitely the mentality I had as well. Just, I used to feel annoyed at how quickly a bottle would go down. It'd be like, I'd start drinking a bottle when I was cooking dinner and it'd be gone by 8:30. And I'd think, what? For God's sake. Like 8:30.
And it didn't touch the sides.
But it's like, well, I can't, what am I going to do now? I'm not going to bed until 10 or 10:30 and it's only 8:30, 8:45. But I would know that if I'd go over a bottle, it would make me feel bad. So that was always my dilemma, personally, is that sticking to one bottle would mean I felt average the next day, which is mad, right? But going over one bottle would mean that I would be below average. But there was never any feeling optimal, apart from obviously not drinking. But even then, I wouldn't say... I was drinking 4 nights a week, sometimes every night if I was on holiday, easily. But 4 to 5 nights, I reckon I was drinking. I tried to have 2 to 3 days off, right? But that's the majority of the week, right, that you're drinking. So the days that you're not drinking, you are getting over drink. You are decreasing. Yeah. So you're never feeling optimal. You're always feeling, like for me, I was always feeling just... suboptimal, basically, just not feeling great. And it's like, if I would go over a bottle, I'd think to myself, just only one glass. You have only what, like a bottle and one glass, only one glass. And then many times would wake up the next day and think, oh, I feel really rough. Like, I really hope when I go downstairs, because I can't remember, I really hope when I go downstairs, I haven't drunk more than a glass or half. I hope I haven't drunk more than half a bottle. And I would go down and 9 times out of 10, it would only be one tiny bit left or a glass left. And it's like, for God's sake. And just really struggling to get through that day, you know, really, really with young kids as well. So for me, like you with grandkids and stuff, but I had 2 young kids to look after. They were like 2 and 4. Yeah, I think I gave up when they were 3 and 5. So pretty much all of their early life, I was drinking. And also for a good year and a half of that, I was on my own, single parent. So it's like absolutely crackers. But, you know, I reckon there's probably lots of people that relate to this, you know, and that's why there's no shame in it now. I don't feel any shame. I find it mad that I was in that life, but I don't look down on that version of myself, and I don't look down on anyone that's caught up in.
No, and I think a lot of people are trapped in it.
Yeah,
it's totally. The mummy, especially women. It's the mummy wine culture where, you know, the kids are in bed. It's your treat, your time.
Yes,
you know, you deserve it.
Yeah, and it's really heavily marketed, right? Like, it's really, really, you know, the alcohol industry spends $6 billion a year making us pick up that wine. You know, it's an awful lot of money is invested in us drinking alcohol.
Well, I've always said, if we stood at the playground, even when I used to drink, you know, you say, you know, if we stood at the playground saying, oh, we're going to go home and do a line of coke, you know, it would be completely different.
Mental,
but we go in, oh, I'm going to go and have a nice bottle of wine in the garden while the kids are playing, and it's acceptable.
Yeah, I know, which is why it's always interesting. I always find that narrative now that I understand about alcohol and drugs, and that basically they're all drugs. Alcohol is a drug as well. You know, don't, you know, never do drugs, never do drugs. But yet we're all sitting there polishing off our Pinot Grigio 3-4 times a week.
Like in play dates.
Yeah, or just in whatever situation. But because that's socially acceptable, for some reason we like to hoodwink ourselves in the fact that it's not a drug, but it is a drug. And it's just, it's a weird, when you come out of it, right, when you step away from drinking and the drinking world, you see it so differently. You see it so differently. Like, you might have been like me, in that when I was in my drinking, even though a lot of the time I felt like I wanted to stop, there were many times that I would be like, I love drinking. I never want to give it up, blah, blah, blah. And it's just, and then the sober person that you would be close, I don't want to go near that person, you know, who would be sober? YOLO, man, you know, life's for living, you only live once. Da, da, da. And now, like, when you step away from it and you see it, it just looks all, like, quite corrupt and looks really damaging, and, like, the whole thing just looks bizarre. Like, why do we drink this thing that creates so much damage in
us? Yeah. I would never can see myself going back to drinking at all. You know, when I look in now, when I go to the pubs now and I see wine and I just look at it and I just think, it's like as if I've been hypnotised. It's like I look at it and I just think, ugh. Yeah. I can imagine it like burning as I drink it. Honestly, it's as if I've joined Thrive and I just got hypnotised.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, one of the things that I think is so, whether it's Thrive or any community or just even Sober Instagram on its own, I mean, different people need different levels of support or like different types of support or different types of help. But that, I think the one thing that's so great about Thrive and these types of communities is that there are people that get it. You know, and there's always someone available to help and to say, oh, you're doing really well. Look, you know, try this, try that. Here's, you know, get creative with this. And I think that connection and building those friendships and, you know, somewhere like Thrive, like everyone is being really authentic. Like people tell you the warts and all. And I love that about it. It's a safe space to just be like, look, this is who I am. And I really want to change this and I'm struggling or I'm this or I'm that. And I think that there's a lot of healing in that kind of environment because there is so much to relate to. And there are people that are slightly ahead of you that are cheering you on. And there are people that are coming in through the door, starting out fresh, that are really struggling. Yeah, and it's like you've always got one end of the scale and the other end of the scale to compare. You know, sometimes seeing people and that remind you of the first 30 days, that's helpful in a way because it's like, oh, yeah, I remember I felt like that. Of course, yeah. And then seeing people that are 6 months on and they're saying, do you know what? I felt like that at 6 months, Grace, and now I'm really good. Just keep going. And it's I just think having that kind of spectrum is really helpful. So
I think so, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, and you know, obviously for you as well, you know, so sorry for your loss with your brother. You have talked openly about your brother in Thrive and you quite recently sort of celebrated an anniversary of his death, didn't you? And you talk about that a little bit. And how do you feel now that you're sober, and you know, how's that kind of impacted all of that?
Well, I was really close to my brother Joseph. He had addictions like most of his life, and he lived with me, so we like really looked after him, and I got him into a rehab place called Walk Ministries, which is a really good place. I raised money for him every birthday, and he came out, and then he just went back down that route, and he started injecting heroin, and then he was drinking as well on top of it. He got sepsis. He lost his leg, and then he continued to do drugs. And then I had a phone call because I was his next of kin. I had his phone call to say that he was in hospital. He was in a coma, and he had something. So every time his heart was beating, bits of clots was coming off and attaching itself to major organs. So there was no aid for him, so they said that when we got up there they would turn his life support machine off. And it's just a shame because he was so close to getting better. And you know, he's such a handsome man, you know what I mean? He was really a good looking bloke in his time, and he had like the gift of the gab. He was like a proper little, you know, Cockney, and all the women up here loved him. And it's just a shame. It's just such a waste what addiction can do. And I always say, like, I've never looked down on my nose on anyone that's, you know, when I see him on the street or anything, because you think that can be your brother, your son, anybody. And I just think that, you know, it slowly takes over you. Whatever addiction it is, it just slowly takes over you. And it is, it's just sad that, you know, all I've got now of him is pictures and smashes and just because he couldn't beat it.
Yeah. And what do you think he would think about you now, literally on the cusp of turning sober 1 year?
We used to always talk about that because I used to say to him, you know, look, Joe, if because I used to think, you know, it'd be easier for it, like me. And I used to say, you know, if you stopped doing heroin, you know, and you stop doing that, and I'll stop drinking, and we'll do it together, we'll be in it together. And I remember telling him once that I'd done 3 months, and he was like, oh, I'm so proud of you, Grace, I'm so proud of you. But, you know, so I know he would, because he used to say, like, because I had bet with him when I was 14 that I was going to give up drinking cans of Coke, because I used to drink loads and loads of cans of Coke. So he knows what a stubborn girl I am. So it's like he has bet, and even though he's died, I'm still not drinking cans of Coke now because I had that bet with him. So he knows that when I put my mind to it. So I know he would be, you know, be really proud.
Yeah,
I think, like, my husband's helped as well, because he doesn't drink as much now. So, like, because he used to be just as big drinker, so we'd sit there and when he's off, have 3 bottles of wine, or we'd like get them 3 boxes, and we'd like have a laugh and say we've got our own little pub, but we'd put them on the radiator, so it'd be like our own little pub on the radiator, like, and just going 3 boxes of wine between two.
Yeah.
So, he doesn't hardly drink now either.
Yeah, wow. Amazing. Big changes all round. And so before we wrap up, are you open for people to follow you on Instagram? If so, what's your handle?
Yeah, it's SoberMum2023. Okay. Nice and simple.
Yeah, at SoberMum2023. Brilliant. And before we go, what are your top 3 tips for people that want to get and stay sober?
My first one is to just pick a date first. Pick a date and, you know, and do it. Don't worry about, like, whether you've got birthdays or you've got anything coming up. You know, just set your mind to it and do it, because you're always going to have birthdays and celebrations and funerals and all that. And get a community. Like, you know, I can't recommend Thrive enough. I know it's your group, but, you know, to me, that's one that done it for me. An Instagram, a sober Instagram account that's just sober, that you can follow all like-minded people and get them following you. And me personally, I told everyone, I just was honest and I said, you know, I'm giving up drinking. I don't want to do it anymore. It makes my anxiety bad. And because then you'll get the support that you need.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant.
Don't compare yourself like I did at the beginning, because it is your own journey. And don't worry if you're not losing weight or you're not rock climbing or you're not, you know, just go for the little wins. And if you want to eat ice cream and you want to eat chocolate and you want to eat, do it, because there's so many much sugar in alcohol, you are going to crave that, and it's better to crave that and worry about that at a later date.
Yeah, that's right. Stopping drinking, that's the priority, isn't it? Not losing weight, not, you know, trying to diet or not eat, you know, not having the things that your body is craving in that moment. I was the same. I just let myself have the sugar. I just let myself have the ice cream or the Mars bar. And I thought, I can tackle this a bit later on.
Yeah.
When the time is right, you know? And, but the main thing is getting rid of that thing that arguably you've wanted to get rid of for a long time. That's the thing, you know, with all of these journeys, people don't just drink for 20, 30 years and then suddenly wake up one day and think, oh, all right, I'm going to stop. People have the nudge or the feeling of wanting to stop for a long time. You know, yeah. People realise, I think, way before when they actually...
And that's one more thing, sorry, Terry, is don't beat yourself up if you have many, many day ones. I have had so many day ones. You know, I've been on day three and started day five, started 3 months, 7 months. My longest was 7 months. And then I decided I looked fantastic, felt fantastic. The weight was slowly starting to come. And I thought, oh, I've proven it. I can go back to drinking now.
Mm.
And then I had to do it all again. But each time has been a learning curve. Mm. And each time I've had more tools, you know, and it will stick if you keep trying. Never give up trying, and don't beat yourself up and think, oh, I can't do it, why can everyone else do it? Because the more times you do it, it will stick.
Yeah, the more practice you get.
Practice makes perfect.
Practice makes perfect, that's right.
That's
what a great way to end. Thanks a lot, Grace, and
thank you.
Have a wonderful soberversary tomorrow.
I will.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.